Liberty sees me, it stands by me, and celebrates me for who I am.
When I come into the office, I feel that I belong here.
I don't have to be corporate America Gabby. I can just bring Gabby to work.
Reach your potential and find a job you love at Liberty Mutual. We offer development training, rich benefits, and a culture that lets you bring your whole self to work so you can pursue your tomorrow today. Ready to consider a career at Liberty Mutual? Find out how at libertymutualcareers.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. If you have a story you'd like to share with us about something paranormal, an encounter with Bigfoot or another cryptid, sighting of a ghost or another undead, perhaps a run-in with aliens,
or the abominable snowman,
all of the above, any and all of the above. If you'd like to share your story with us, email us strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com. I will put out my occasional caveat that my email inbox is swamped constantly. I do my best to keep up with it. I will be late, probably, in responding to you. Please don't take offense. That's the thing I worry about. I worry about people going to get upset and think that I'm ignoring them or I don't care about what they're saying. I really do, and I love getting all the email. I love reading all these stories. I just don't have enough time. That said, we'll get to everybody in due course. And maybe someday we'll get that intern. And whoever it is can answer email. Well, tonight we're going to be talking with Brian, who has a number of Fae and Bigfoot encounters. Maybe the same thing, because they're these kind of Class B encounters that we talk a lot of, where nothing is really seen, but these strange things happen out in the woods. He's also got a lucid dreaming experience with greys, some UFO stuff, an encounter with the old man on the hill. We talk about stick structures and kind of compare notes on that and gifting and more. We'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get going, I want to mention to everybody that my art book, Apparitions, is still available. Right now, you still have to get it directly from us. Amazon warehouses are not taking new publishers for some reason. All of my other books are on Amazon, but Apparitions, my art book, you got to get it from us. You can find a place to order at strangefamiliars.com, or you can go to our Etsy shop, shop name Lost Grave. Tee Public store is on sale again, I believe, through Friday. If you hear this on Thursday, I think you got one more day. Links for all that stuff is in the show notes. So without further ado, let's get to my talk with Brian. Okay, tonight we're talking with Brian, who has some experiences to share with us. Sounds like some possible Bigfoot stuff, at least the kind of stuff that Class B encounters are made of. Is that about right?
That is exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. I I have a whole slew of them, those and others that would, I think, would probably match up with the show pretty well.
I'm excited to hear them. So where do we start? Right.
Well, I figure I'd talk a little bit about like who I am, where I'm coming from on this.
Sure.
I've been interested in the paranormal since I was a kid. Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, all that stuff. I sound like a broken record, but it was In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy that did it.
That was the gateway drug for so many of us.
Right. And it's one of those things where it's been so fun to listen on your show and hear everybody and other shows where people are like, yeah, In Search Of. And it's, I don't know what it is about why or how that happened, but it definitely happened.
Just out of curiosity, about how old were you when you were watching this?
I was probably 7 or 8.
Yeah, I think it just captured our imagination. You know, at a young age, it just really drew us in. And because around the same age, probably.
Yeah, and I was interested in Bigfoot. I thought it was kind of cool. I was interested in, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, the big ones, you know. Mm-hmm. And then In Search Of came on, and then it was over. I mean, it just sealed the deal for me. It captured everything that I had ever thought about regarding the paranormal in those wee tiny years.
Yeah, well, it's all presented as true too, you know, which was a really neat thing, I think, for a little kid.
Yeah, and like if memory serves, like that was my first like introduction to the Patty film.
I think it was mine as well. I think so. Yeah.
Okay, and I remember that boggling my little mind so much. Unfortunately, something else happened, which my father, bless his heart, took me to go see Legend of Boggy Creek in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably around, I don't know, I was around the same age. And I'm not sure it was in 72. It might have been in like 74, 75 when it came back around in like rental theaters and stuff. But that film terrified me.
Same boat. I mean,
oh really? Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. I loved it, but it was horrifying.
Okay, so my grandparents had a trailer out near a local reservoir, and my grandfather had bought it as a place to go on the weekends for fishing trips and for family get-togethers, and we had it out there, and it was wild and woolly out there when he bought it, and there was a bathroom in that trailer. If you remember the bathroom scene in Legend of Boggy Creek when the arm comes through the window, mm-hmm. There was a bathroom in that trailer that matched that bathroom exactly. And I refused to use it unless it was daytime. It was daytime. It was okay. Right. But at nighttime, my parents would get a little fed up with me. But
one of these Bigfoot specials, I don't think it was in Boggy Creek. I watched Boggy Creek for the first time in a long time, sometime within the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And I thought this scene came from Boggy Creek, but it must have come from another like Bigfoot show or in, you know, one of these In Search Of type shows or something from the 70s. But an arm reaches in a window, a Bigfoot arm, and grabs a lamp.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I have a perfect memory of this, you know, when I was a kid. I think I saw that clip somewhere recently, too. And I thought, oh, I always thought that was in Boggy Creek and it was from something else. Anyway.
Oh, no. Well, maybe I'm getting it mixed up, too.
But I remember my brother telling me about this before I ever saw it, one of my older brothers. And I pictured it happening in the living room of my parents' house. And I could never shake that. And I would never sit by that lamp, by that window. So the right? same kind of thing as you're talking about with the bathroom there. I just wouldn't sit up there at all. Even as like a teenager, I was like, nah, I'll sit elsewhere in the room.
Right, right. And I remember like my dad saying, hey, you need to go take the trash out. We'd be out after maybe going on a fishing trip. And we need to take the fish and dump them off in the wood line, whatever. And he'd be like, you need to take those out. And it's dark. And I remember running in the dark with a flashlight, like the least amount of time I could possibly spend outside in the dark out there in the woods, which that's just the way it was for me as a kid. Now that changed considerably as I grew up, but it set the pace for a good long while. Yeah. And then I just moved forward from that and was just really interested, did a lot of reading on UFOs and paranormal psychic phenomena, all of that. Started like a little paranormal group of friends in college, and we ran around and did things not very well, but we did them. And then I joined another as an adult and did a lot of solo investigations, and kind of I've been doing it for a couple decades now, and it's been this fascinating bit of research, just this fascinating part of the world that I'm just intrigued by. And I remember when I saw where the footprints end, there was a blurb or something that I saw earlier in the year. I was like, I think I need to see that book. That's hitting on all my cylinders. And I remember I got the book and got onto your show and started listening. And I was like, I need to reach out. I need to talk, because there's a familiarity here with some of my experiences and with the things you were talking to other people about. So that's where I'm coming from. In early childhood, there was, I believe, a ghost in my house. I look back now with adult eyes and I wonder, but something was going on. I called it George the Ghost, and it would occasionally knock things off the shelf of my bedroom. And I had, I still am a sci-fi geek. And I had, if you remember the old Battlestar Galactica TV show, I had Cylon Raider model ships and TIE fighter hanging from my ceiling. And I remember that I could ask the ghost to spin those for me sometimes. And I was never really scared. It was weird. I look back and I wonder if there was some sort of crazy adolescent poltergeist TK stuff going on, but then later talking to my mother about stories in that house, how she hated the basement and how she felt the basement was haunted, but she never told me. And so again, like, that happens a lot with stories involving ghosts and odd phenomena. Usually people, even in the same household, will have these stories, but they keep them to themselves. And then you talk about them and you're like, oh yeah, that happened. Oh yeah, that happened. And you have this familiarity all of a sudden sort of come up. So I don't know. I don't know what it was all about, but I remember having this, I don't know, ghost spirit thing in my room. It would hang out with me. It's hard to really put into words the feeling I would have. As I grew older, I started doing some lucid dreaming work and got really interested in psychic phenomena. Looked into UFOs when I was younger. I have one story I want to tell, and just from listening to some of your stories and other people's stories, I think it might be of interest. I had been doing a lot of lucid dreaming, working on it. This was probably in my early college days, and having some decent successes with it, keeping a dream journal and all that. And I remember in this dream, I was strapped to a bed or on a bed. And in the dream, there were basically sort of the stereotypical grays hovering over me. One or two of them were holding implements and they were about to do something. And I got really scared in the dream, really nervous, really anxious, and I wanted to go. I wanted the dream to be over. And I remember I got like this thought in my head that was like, well, no, you just need to go through this dream. Everything's going to be okay. And something clicked and I said, no, I can control this dream and you can't control me. And I, in the dream, I like manifested a pistol in my hand.
Oh, wow.
And shot the gray. And he fell back with this kind of shocked look on his face, and I woke up.
Wow.
And I'd had another dream that is really foggy to me when I was a younger kid about, I don't know, something like maybe like an abduction scenario, but it was like a dream. And it was just really foggy to me. And it's been in my life, my whole life. And I'm like, I can never get back to it. I can never remember it. I just know it's kind of there. But this dream with the gun and the lucid dreaming is still to this day crystal clear. And after that moment, I didn't have any more experiences like that. You can also look at it that I was dreaming and working out some sort of conflict in my brain. You know, the symbolism in there. I'm very aware of all that, but I just found it fascinating how crystalline it was, the experience, mm-hmm. and how quickly I woke up after I had shown that I could control the dream and they couldn't control me. So thought I'd throw that out there.
Now, when you say you woke up, you woke up as in like you woke from the dream or you?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I woke straight up from the dream and was wide awake. even could even feel the pistol grip, like the grip of the pistol in my hand as I woke up.
Wow.
Yeah, and I woke up and I thought, like, what's in my hand? Like, is it, do I still, how, what? And then, of course, it faded away.
So it was previous to this that you had been practicing some lucid dreaming?
Yeah, correct. I'd probably been doing that for about maybe 6 months.
Okay. So you had, in a sense, you know, some, I don't want to say mastery, because I don't know if anybody ever masters but some feeling of the dream sense, I guess, where you could recognize a dream, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it would come and go. I would go 3 or 4 days without being able, I'd keep a dream journal every night, do things like set an alarm clock at 2 a.m. to wake yourself up. So you kind of wake up in the middle of the dream so you can kind of get used to that. Mm-hmm. Little tips and tricks that are in the lucid dreaming books that I'd been reading. And I'd been doing that. Every now and then I'd have one and I would be able to control the environment and, you know, ooh, this is fun. And then you wake up. This was the first one where, like, I didn't have control and then I suddenly had control. Like,
right.
There was a toggle, like almost like a unseen toggle got flipped when I was like, no, this isn't going to happen. And that's how it manifested. And that's how I decided to handle the situation. I don't know what that says.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know.
But
some people would say, oh, you should have gone through with whatever they were doing. But I'm kind of with you. I think I would have, had I the ability, I would have manifested a pistol.
Right? Like, no, this, we're done here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I've had a couple interesting, UFO sightings. Like, I think Class B, you said Class B at the beginning of the show, and I think that really is spot on. There was a time, as I grew older, I spent more time in the woods. There was, when I was a young adult, there was very much this sense of, I've got to get over this fear. I've got to get over this fear that I have of going into the woods. I discovered Tom Brown and some of his wilderness survival stuff. Started getting really interested in bushcraft and started spending more and more time in the woods and getting familiar with it and learning it. Spending overnights, which was something I was terrified of all the way up until probably my late teens, early 20s. I just hated being out in the woods at night. And that's changed now. But during that time, I was actually near the lake where my grandparents had their trailer. And I was kind of leaning over, I was looking at some rocks at the edge of the water, and it was morning. And I was looking out over the water, you know, like you're looking into the water, you're looking for rocks along the shore. And there, like in the reflection of the water, there was this silver orb floating above the lake, like kind of flattened. And I remember I saw the reflection and I thought, oh, that's a trick of the light. That's interesting. And I focused on it a little bit more and it was still there. And I probably only a few seconds. And then I looked up and of course the sky was blue and clear. And I looked back down in the water and it was gone. Again, could be hallucination. I wasn't drinking and I wasn't doing anything illicit on that hike. But I've had another moment. Actually, the beginning of this year, I was out on my porch early in the morning, and I happened to, I was meditating. I like to meditate in the morning, and I had my eyes open, and I thought I saw a white plane moving across the sky, and it sort of, I was first aware of it at about like 10:30, 11 o'clock, if I'm looking straight ahead, and that's 12, mm-hmm. And it was kind of in my peripheral vision, and I'm like, oh, that's a little private plane. I wonder why I didn't see it fly over. And okay. And then I realized it was moving kind of fast and faster than a private plane should move. And I remember then I sort of shifted and locked my eyes on it and I followed it and it went behind trees and some leaves. And I thought, oh, it should come out this other side because of how fast it was moving. And I looked and I waited and then it was gone. And I don't know what to think of that. It still bugs me.
Right.
These are very weird intervals. Like this only happens maybe once every handful of years, I'll see something out in the corner of my eye, whether that be something in the sky like a UFO, or when I'm on a ghost hunt, I'll feel or sense something in my peripheral vision and I'll look over and of course there's nothing there. I don't know. Thought I'd mention it as we gear up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it was a normal aircraft, it had to, take a hard left turn or something behind the trees, right?
And, well, yeah. And I it was flying straight and fast, and it would have, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish I could say more. It's one of those things. It's a mystery, right? In a long line of mysteries. So, yeah, but back on track with Bigfoot stuff and what I like to call fae stuff, because I think one of the things that wanted me to really drew me to contact you was in Where the Footprints End, you and Joshua talked about sort of the combination or the intersection of Bigfoot Sasquatch stories with the fae or mm-hmm. with fairy.
Yeah.
And I'll tell a quick story when my first encounter with what I call the fae, and I'm definitely not talking Disney fae here.
Right.
This was my wake up call that, okay, something's going on here. Mm-hmm. I was in Scotland. I had gone with my partner at the time. She and I had gone on a 3-week camping, live in our car trip of Scotland. And she knew the territory. She had been there before. It was my first time there. And I cannot remember where or which loch we were at, but she had talked about the fae and was interested in Wiccan ideas and that stuff. And so the talk of the fae kind of came up quite a bit when we were over in Scotland, more than normal. And I didn't really put any weight in it at the time. So we were at this loch. And I'm a third generation photographer. I've had a camera in my hand since I was probably 5 years old. And I had a camera with me on my trip to Scotland, and it was a film camera. And I had been taught since an early, early age that you can lose a lens cap really easily. And so you take the lens cap off and you always either keep it in your hand or you put it somewhere where you know it is. And I'd gone through numerous lens caps until I learned that lesson. And I was on the lock on the edge on the shore and was going to take a picture. And I remember very clearly, I took the lens cap off the camera and I put it to my right, balancing on a round rock right next to me where I was sitting. I took two shots and turned around and the lens cap was gone. It was gone. There was no wind. It was not that windy of a day, which if you know Scotland is a little strange, but it wasn't that windy, not enough to blow a lens cap anywhere. I remember I kind of spun several circles looking for it and it never showed up. It just disappeared. And this was probably a week and a half into our trip. So much so that we were traveling through Fort William and we stopped at Fort William and I wanted to get another lens cap because with the hiking and the camping and all that, I didn't want my lens to get scratched. So I needed to get a lens cap. So we're at Fort William. I buy a lens cap that fits my camera, put it on. Everything's great. Another just important point, I was by myself on the shore of the lock. My partner at the time, she was up on another part of the lock, maybe a couple hundred yards away. We had split and we're just kind of having our own experiences. So I was by myself when that happened. So we're at the end of our trip now. A lot of cool, crazy, wonderful things happened. Some interesting things. One little story of lost time, which I'll get into if we have time to talk about it. But really cool things happened. We're at the end of the trip. We are at Castle Rigg Stone Circle, which is it's near Keswick. It's like in the northwest section of England. And we're outside the Castle Rigg Stone Circle. We wanted to stop there and get all our stuff together in the car because we were going to make a lightning trip down to England, down to London to catch our flight. And so drive all the way down there. So in order to do that, we stopped at the Castle Rigg, have kind of a final cool moment at the Castle Rigg Stone Circle, unpack the car, pack it back, get ready to go. We've done that. And the car is completely cleared out at this point. All the stuff is outside the car. We're reorganizing our packs. We're reorganizing everything, getting our souvenirs together. And I go to get back in the car to get one more thing. And the lens cap that I had lost on the shore of the loch was sitting on in the dead center of the floor of the car on the passenger side. Right? And I had read a couple things about Fae and little tricksters and things like that during my trip there. And so I said, thank you. Thanks for returning it. I left some candy near the stone circle and said, thank you very much. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm not sure what you used it for. But to that point in my life, I had never had something that blatant, whether it was in a port or what happened, but I've never had something that blatant happen to me before.
Right. We call them tap you on the shoulder moments, you know, where it's just like, okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. And at that point forward, I started being really interested in the Fae, in stories of fairy, stories of the Fae in America, not so much England and Europe. Though, I mean, I wanted to learn more about what was around me in the here and now. Mm-hmm. You know, Pukwudgies and just all the different bits of lore that I could find. And I really did. I don't know what it was that started me towards this idea that Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Green Man, Wild Man, right? Like that this mm-hmm. all, there's this overlap of encounters with the paranormal and Bigfoot. And I don't know. And as I've grown into my experience being out in the woods, I see it a lot more as an animist perspective, that the woods are alive. Things you're in, the woods are their own home. They're in their own house, and you're entering into a different space when you go into them. And it's really important to open up to that. And so I've been taking that into my treks into the woods here lately.
I have a quiz for you, Allison.
Okay.
How many days to the perfect puppy?
89 and three quarters.
Wrong. It's 90 days to the perfect puppy. You can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 days to the perfect puppy link at the top of the page. 90 days to the perfect puppy can help you with a relationship-based approach to training. They help you and your puppy become perfect for each other. They have online sources, video lessons, a secret Facebook group, and one-on-one options are available as well. You know what kinds of things they can help you with, Allison?
Potty training, fear and nervousness, barking, chewing on furniture or shoes, crate training, hyperactivity issues, leash training, and more. I also think for a particularly precocious perfect puppy, you could do it in 89 days.
89 and three quarters days.
Yeah.
90 days to the perfect puppy can help you understand how your dog thinks and apply proactive training methods to help you and your puppy become perfect for each other. Again, you can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 days to the perfect puppy link at the top of the page. And we'd like to thank 90 days to the perfect puppy and Sid Happens for their continuing support of Strange Familiars.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One other story real quick that leads into this. We had gotten back from Scotland. We had decided to homestead on a, unfortunately this relationship did not last much longer after this, but we decided to homestead on a dead end gravel road that was up against a ridge out in the boonies. We got a fairly good price on a piece of land and we built a yurt. We were going to live in a yurt and then use that to build our home along the line. We had a whole big plan. Mm-hmm. So we were at the very base of this medium-sized ridge, didn't think anything about it. It was pretty steep. And the whole area felt weird with a Y. You know, like it just, there were times it was beautiful and it was wonderful and it was everything you could hope for in that setting. And then sometimes it just wasn't. Like say the toggle got thrown and you would feel really weird and all you wanted to do was go inside. And pretty early on in our experiences out there, especially my experiences out there, you would go out to adjust the tarps and check the lines to make sure, especially if there was a rain coming in or a storm, and I would wander around the yurt and at night, and I would feel it was that deep sense of being watched, that sense that there was something up on the ridge that was watching and wasn't really happy about us being there. And I thought it was just me. I thought it was my nerves. I thought it was my old childhood fears coming home to roost, right?
Right.
And there were nights it got pretty intense where you just felt like something was walking around. Like you wouldn't hear anything. You just felt like there was something around the area. And I took it seriously and I would just tell myself to knock it off until my friends who would come visit would comment on it, especially if it was night. They'd be like, wow, it feels really weird. Like, what's up on the hill? And they would ask me questions like, why are you asking me what's up on the hill? Woods? I don't know. And they're like, no, it just feels like, is there a house up there? It feels like somebody's up there. And it just got to be a thing. And I hadn't said anything to anyone. Occasionally you would have this sense of not just being watched, but almost like something was sneaking up on you, if that makes sense, of being, I don't want to say like a predator prey thing, but just feeling that something was trying to sneak up on you. Mm-hmm. There were owls, of course, but there were odd owl sounds as well. Sometimes there was, there were a couple of experiences when I think back where they weren't rocks being thrown, but like limbs would fall down near where, like a limb would come flying, not big limbs, but like a branch of a tree would fall down out of nowhere near me, like as if it was thrown from up there. And at the time I was like, oh, that's probably just, I don't know, something knocked it loose from the tree up there. I don't know if there were any rocks thrown. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't remember anything because at that time I wasn't connecting it to Bigfoot.
Right.
Right. I was just connecting it to something really weird is up on the hill. Other friends had, like I said, had commented on it. I had a very sensitive friend at the time. She came out to visit us and she called it a medicine valley and said that she said there was something weird up on the hill. And I hadn't told her anything about it. And whether that was, I don't know, you know, to this day, yeah. I still don't know what all that was. We were never screamed at or anything like that. Though there was one moment, I'm not really sure what happened. It was late at night. The relationship had started to break apart and I had gone out. There was nobody living out there at the time. And I had gone back out to collect a few things and check on the property and it was dark. A friend of mine was with me at the time in the car and we drove out there and I went out there and I checked, got the things I wanted to get. And there was, I you could call it a combination of like a bluff charge and a zap of being zapped. Like I was standing outside the yurt and I felt this rush of energy, of maybe wind or energy or something coming down off the ridge at me very, very fast. And I turned around and there was, of course, nothing there, but I felt like there was something just out the edge of the tree line that had rushed down the hill at me. And my friend who was in the car, they had the windows down and they said that they could feel it too. Like, and they were talking about how they saw like the trees move. Mm-hmm. I had my back to it at the time and I kind of felt it come up on me and I turned and I remember I saw some of the branches moving, but they saw the trees move as it came down the hill. And so that was nice to have someone there.
Yeah, I quite enjoy that second opinion.
Yes, like it was nice to have, because that really, I mean, I've heard other stories of bluff charges and I've heard other stories of getting zapped, and I've been zapped. That's another story that's coming up, but it was like a combination of both of them. And then I just wanted to leave. Like,
yeah. And I mean,
just get out of there.
If you think about every bluff charge, well, I won't say every, almost every bluff charge story I've ever heard, including Chad's when he was bluff charged at Harry Springs.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No one's ever seen anything. You know,
yeah,
they just right? get the sound and the feeling and they know something's coming towards them. But it, you know, except for I can't think of any off the top of my head. I'm sure there's some I'm not remembering. But for the, right. you know, the vast majority of them don't end with like a creature popping out of the brush.
Right.
They
right.
end with the people retreating before they ever see anything.
Yeah. And or it just returns back to normal and everybody leaves.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And that's what happened with me was. I was pretty unhinged by it because I fully expected to turn around and see like an elephant coming up, because it's that the just this big energy, right? Mm-hmm. Just rushing at you. So that was sort of the last thing that happened out there. And it wasn't till years later, because I never thought here in Southern Indiana, I'd been interested in it, but it wasn't until probably in the last 10 or 12 years that I've started to put all this together that, oh, hey, there are stories of Bigfoot in my area. I found a group of people here that are interested in it and have met with some of them and have heard their stories, seen some prints of things in the area, learned of a few hotspots. And it was at that point that we used to call it the old man on the hill. I'm sorry, I didn't say that, but it got to be a thing, like, oh, the old man on the hill's pissed off. Like, we just kind of named it that because we didn't know what else to name it. And that's what it felt like. It felt like this grumpy old guy on the hill was mad at us.
Right.
And another important note, the area had been logged about a year and a half prior to us getting the small strip of property. The ridge had been logged and torn up kind of badly. Mm. And we sort of attributed it to that point to maybe some fey upset energy, something going on there. And so I didn't connect the dots until recently, really, where I was like, oh, and I started hearing other people's stories and then connecting the dots. That's the best way to put it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, one other story is that, and this one is completely unrelated to anything, but I wanted to tell it because both my wife and I saw it and we think it's connected. We think it's connected to this Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Fae, whatever we want to call it, thing that's happening. We were coming back from Indianapolis and we were driving on Highway 67 and it was late at night. I think it was around 11 o'clock at night and normal drive home, no bad weather, pretty clear skies. And we're driving back. I think we were listening to the radio and listening to some music. And the car up ahead, the road was pretty, there was only one car up ahead of us. And it tapped its brakes, which I've been on country roads enough to know that when you're driving in on the road in the middle of the night like that, and a car up ahead of you taps its brakes, it's probably a deer or a raccoon or something's in the road. So I slowed down and the car up ahead tapped its brakes and kind of moved a little bit to the right. got on the shoulder a little bit and then kept going. And I didn't see anything. I was like, oh, I wonder what's up here. Maybe something was on the side of the road, you know, just standing there. And we get up to the spot. There was something in the middle of the road. It was humanoid in shape. It was, as my wife said, it wasn't black. It was just like an absence of light.
Huh. Yeah.
It was about 9 feet tall. And like I think I said, a humanoid in shape. And it was kind of, it happened so fast. I mean, this is just like a blink of an eye situation where I thought I saw something. I thought, what? It's one of those things where you're like, what am I seeing? And then your eyes focus on it. And unlike the other things that had disappeared, like the UFO, this thing was there. And I swerved the car and just kept driving because I just, like, something told me not, like, you don't stop. Like, it wasn't a person. It wasn't like, right. It wasn't somebody just crossing the road. It was a black, we don't know. We still don't know. We talk about it all the time, but we don't know what it was. And to this day, it still kind of boggles us. But I wanted to mention it because it is also, later as I learned where some hotspots were, it's also not too far away from a hotspot in the area where there's been Bigfoot sightings historically.
Well, and again, I've heard these stories of people who, you know, taking Bigfoot as an example, who've looked for Bigfoot their entire life. These guys that have just like obsessively, you know, hunted Bigfoot and mm-hmm. going out in the woods. And, you know, I've heard more than one of these stories where they're like, they finally got to see one and they just drove by it.
Yeah, right.
And they realized later, like, oh my God, what did I do? Like, I've been looking for this thing my entire life and it was there and I just drove on by.
It really, to be like, it never registered as Bigfoot as we were, like, we were more like, what was in the road? And it wasn't until like further along, I think it was, we were almost home and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and I didn't know that there was a hotspot nearby at the time when that happened. And so it was like, wait, that was tall. It was big and like humanoid. What else? Like what could like Slender Man? I mean, I don't know. It wasn't that skinny. And we just drove past. Freak out is a good term. It was like a silent freak out. Like, I think there was some cussing from me because I had to swerve and I was like, what the mm-hmm. bleep was that? And did you see that? That was my next question to her because I needed verification that I wasn't seeing things. And no, she was right there. She was like, no, I saw it. What was it? And we just kept driving.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel like it was important to stop. It might not be a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's something there on an intuitive level. Like, we just need to move.
Just keep going. Yeah. A lot of Class B stuff. I don't know. Like, nothing that we can definitely point her finger out and say,
no, that's
this was a thing. But
I find that incredibly interesting, though. We'll talk about Class B theories after we hear some more stories.
Yeah. Okay. So pretty much brings me up to current for the most part on my Bigfoot face stuff. What I've been doing recently is I've been doing a lot more research in the woods, kind of getting serious. I about 5 years ago, I started looking at stick structures. When I was hiking, I do a lot of hiking off trail. Mm-hmm. And I started finding these stick structures and started looking on YouTube, and they were looking awfully similar. The first group I found, I was just on a hike with a family member, and we kind of looked over and were like, what the heck is that? And when I measured it, it was about 7 feet tall, weird logs and sticks jammed together to form kind of a conical shape. It wasn't like a bushcraft shelter. It was more disorganized than that. And it looked like it might've been there a while, and it could have been a tree fall. I mean, no, it wasn't a tree fall, but there were others. I've gotten to the point now where I can look at tree falls and I can tell the difference between the two, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I went back, and during this trip, when we found those, we found two or three deer carcasses or bits of deer back there, bones, a rib cage, just we found that pretty interesting because it's not, you might find one every now and then, but we found like pretty much three different strewn carcasses in that area. So I went back about a week and a half later and decided to go up the ridge a little bit to see if there were any more. And I did find more areas there and more weird little structures and like several branches just leaning against a tree, like not very high off the ground. Like we're not talking like big, magnificent structures, just three or four different branches leaning against a tree, almost like a trail marker, mm-hmm. which I could get behind if, I mean, I don't know. There just seemed to be a lot of them in this one particularly thick area. And so that was my kind of my first introduction to it. Because that was about 5 years ago. Yeah. And I was at another. Yeah.
So if you've been looking at them, and I just want to kind of compare notes a little bit.
Yeah, please. Yes.
The ones that are really compelling to me seem to be a combination of living trees bent into mm-hmm. the structures and then, you know, dead stuff kind of used to like bend or pin the living tree down. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I have. I have. I've noticed that. And I've noticed that there's usually one living, like in some of my cases, it's a living tree where other sticks or branches or just full limbs have been propped up against them mm-hmm. in almost, trying to figure out the angle degree, not like maybe a 60 degree angles kind of, where they're almost forming a triangle. Mm-hmm. And then with the boughs, like we have snow boughs here. I think you guys probably have those over in Pennsylvania too, where the snow load kind of bows the tree over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the tree, yeah. But these are different. They're exactly what you're saying, where they are bent over and then other branches or bits have been used, almost woven into them yep. to keep them down in place.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
I can't figure out if it's pointing a direction or if it's marking something. I'm not sure.
But before we leave the construction of them and get into the symbolism of them,
right?
The other thing I found is they're really well put together.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not easy to pull apart.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Because I've messed with them, you know, to try to like, let me figure out how mm-hmm. this is done. And they're like, I figured I'd just shake them apart and the thing would come falling down. No, they don't come down easily at all.
Oh, no, not at all. They are usually pretty wedged together. You can take like a tree fall or where maybe the top of a tree has fallen down on itself. And then those limbs have kind of fallen over time as the thing starts to just fall apart by gravity and the elements. And they will kind of sometimes form a similar structure to kind of the V conical shapes that I have seen. Mm-hmm. But those, you can shake them apart.
Yeah, yeah.
They aren't wedged together and they're usually not pieces of other trees that aren't... Like a piece of a pine that's jammed in with a bunch of oaks where'd this pine limb come from? Like the only pine is 50 yards away. How did that get here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what really starts to throw me is when there's pieces of other trees that are in there. Or, you know, it's always nice when you find one where the root ball is up in the air. Mm-hmm. You're like, how did that happen?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you found any of those.
I have found one like that.
Yeah, they're rare, but there's, I mean, yeah, you go.
Yeah, and you just shrug. Like, you just shrug your shoulders.
How did a tree fall upside down? That's
right, yeah. Right. How did that get there?
Yeah.
The other cool stick structure or tree structure thing that I found, I was at another hiking spot, and I was just hiking with my youngest child, and we were like having a nice little family hike. And I looked down, and I'm like, "Wait a minute, that's an X." What? Wait a minute. And so, luckily, they like cryptids and all this good stuff. So they came along with me, and we went down there and started looking around. And there was the leaning tree into the fork of a tree. Mm-hmm. There were a couple asterisks on the ground. Placed, yeah, like a glyph on the ground. And here's part of the bingo card, I think. They were right next to a power line cut through.
Oh, neat.
Right? And so we're walking along, and this was probably a stretch of maybe 40, 50 yards. There were these, I was seeing asterisks. I was seeing these lean-ons, no bows, which was interesting. And then near the end, there was another X. And so I took some pictures and we're looking at it all. And there was a deer trail that ran all the way through them, which I thought was interesting. And I go up to this last X and I'm looking at it, and there's something where the two limbs or trunk of these trunks of trees that are crossed, there's something in the center of it. And I go up and there was a bit of bone directly in the center of it. It was a small bone. It had been there a while and had been chewed on a little bit, but it had, something had jammed it down in the very direct center of the X. I don't know.
Yeah. I had mentioned, this is a couple years back, I'd mentioned to a sort of Bigfoot researcher in Western Pennsylvania, we were talking, and that was right when I started finding all the skulls. And I mentioned to him, I said, you know, I don't know what this is, dude. I'm finding skulls everywhere. Yeah. Every investigation I go on, I'm finding skulls. And he happened to go out the next day, and right on top of, I think it was a teepee structure. But right on the top of it is this hip bone of some kind of animal, just, or a pelvis rather, of a, some kind of animal, just right there on top of it. And he sends me a picture the next day. He's like, "Hey, you mentioned bones. Here you go."
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. Well, speaking of skulls, at that first site that I went to, and then I went back. I said I went back like a week and a half later, and two of the carcasses, like the deer bits, were still there. I think my brother and I would have seen this when we went the first time because of the direction we walked up onto the structure. But I'm willing to say that maybe we stepped over it or we just missed it. But there was a deer skull, a 6-point buck deer skull with spinal column, like right kind of in the open. And so I brought that home with me. that was like, okay, I'm gonna take that home.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting to go back to that site repeatedly. Up above that site, I found smaller kind of teepee-like shapes, almost like little huts. And, you know, I was like, did a bunch of Boy Scouts come out here and do a bunch of bushcraft, like really crappy bushcraft? Like, what's going on? I just let it be. And I went back, and this was earlier this year, and I went back up on the ridge a little bit to look at that site again. And one of them was just torn down. And the other one, parts of it were still up. But the other one, not only, and it didn't just fall over. Something had come and strewn the sticks and like spread them out. And to this day, it doesn't make any sense to me why someone would, if it was somebody, why would they go and only tear one of them down?
Yeah.
And it was purposefully strewn around. Like, it wasn't until I started looking around and I could see that there were some sticks that might have been, and branches and trunks that might have been part of that structure. It was just leveled, and I have no idea why.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen bushcraft shelters, and I've seen people post photos of bushcraft shelters and say, you know, look what Bigfoot did, you know, and it's like quite obviously, no, that's a bushcraft shelter. In fact, there's one in a very well-traveled county park here that I've seen people in Pennsylvania Bigfoot groups put, you know, publish pictures of it. I recognized it. I've walked by it so many times, and they're like, oh, look at this structure. And I'm just like, I know for a fact that it's just a practice, you know, bushcraft shelter someone made. It's not that, but
yeah, it's obvious.
These other structures that we're talking about, the fact that people will, you know, some of these researchers will say, oh, they're hunting blinds. Well, they're piss poor hunting blinds. They're not they're, like, right. I couldn't hide it, right? Much less a giant ape man.
Yeah.
Or they're some kind of shelter. No, they're not. They're not, you know, that's their shelter for their babies. Well, they're piss poor shelters too. They're open to the sky. Like, none of them are well done. There's something else. And
I agree 100%. Yeah. They're not shelters.
Markers, yeah, quite possibly. I mean, that's you know, sort of Occam's razor, most likely explanation, some kind of marker.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. There's got to be, who knows what that marker's for.
Right. In Where the Footprints End, Volume 2, I get into the idea of them possibly being like some kind of fetish, religious altar, three-dimensional sigil, you know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like
some kind of, you know, fetish in a magical sense.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
But
that's, you know, interesting. I can't wait.
Yeah. It's just an idea.
That's a great theory
that I'm playing with, because I don't see, I mean, even as trail markers, it's like they tend to be bunched up, like you're saying. We come to like a bunch of them together instead of, now I know people have found them where they seem to be in a straight line, you know, every 200 yards or whatever that lead to a creek. I haven't, in my experience, I just haven't found that. I found them like, I'll find like clumps of them together. There'll be 3, 4, 5 of them together. And then it's seemingly no rhyme or reason to them.
Yeah, that's what I've found, is they are in clumps. I'll walk through woods, or even my wife and I now will drive through woods and we'll look for them. Now, you know, in the fall and the winter, like, is there, and you can see tree falls and leaning branches and top offs where a top of a tree is broken off. And it's, after you look at these enough, once you find a bunch of them, right, and you can start looking at them, they're very different. And they are in bunches. I've not seen anything that's like an actual trail marker. The only thing I've seen that is close to that is sometimes I'll find an X, or it's not even an X, it's more like a T or a cross, where something's been balanced in another tree, and it's anywhere from 30 to 40 yards away from a major path or a road, as if to say, hey, heads up.
Right, you're coming up on something here. Yeah, and people have talked about, there's been some fascinating encounters, like on Sasquatch Chronicles, where people have said they've found, you know, sticks laid out in their yard, and they're laid at precisely the place that if you step over them, the automatic lights, you know, the motion sensor lights come on. I'm not sure. Yeah, who's sure about any of this? But
right.
You know, that certainly seems like a purposeful thing, that if these things are out there, that they would do.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things I've been doing in this one particular state forest near me that has had repeated stories and some historical stories in there, that I've just been going out and looking for stick structures, had some success. I mentioned my zapped story. I was following, there was another weird group of stick structures, and I decided to go up. It was about 2/3 of the way up a ridge. So I'm like, okay, I'll go up on top of the ridge and see what's up there. Nothing. I looked around, kind of did a couple circular search patterns, you know, just looking to see what I could find. And I was heading out, and you get that, it's almost like a buzz. It's almost like this sense of, you need to leave now. All the hackles went up on my neck, and it just felt like almost like a psychic shove, like go away. And I did. I always try and be respectful when I get that feeling.
I always tell people, pay attention.
I don't want to cross them. Then here lately, near the end of the year, I decided to, I don't know, it was just an instinct. I was walking a trail in that area, and I wasn't off trail, I was just on the trail, and I kind of got this pull that like, hey, look over here. And I thought I saw what was like an old road. So I started hiking up that ridge and got off trail, and I found an area that was, had been logged maybe 3 years ago, just given the state of the growth and everything that's coming up now. And I just felt like I should do a gifting site. So I started leaving some gifts. I did a little rock cairn. I did, left some tobacco and left some, seeds and corn and just little things, anything I could think of, I would take up there. And I was going out there about every week, and I had maybe 4 or 5 spots that I was, I don't know, just doing it, see what happens. I kind of felt like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters. Like, I don't know, this means something. And I would go up there and do this. It started to feel really peaceful up there. Now, I understand confirmation bias. I'm aware of it, but it started feeling really pleasant up there, to the point where I would go up there and I would get wood knocks every time I would approach. I would be coming down the trail before I'd bounce off trail. There was a particular spot in the trail where I'd get one or two loud taps. I've been using an audio recorder as I go out now and was able to capture one or two of them.
Nice.
And I had a couple of the little things happen. You know, it's always the little things. And you're like, okay, all right. And I was going up there and I had probably been going up there for about, 8 weeks, maybe 8 or 10 weeks. And I was going further up. I'd found another spot further up the ridge and had left another gifting site all the way at the top. And just playing around, really. And so after about 8 or 9 weeks, I was walking up there and I was finding chanterelle mushrooms. So I was harvesting some chanterelles at the time as well. And I kind of felt this pull, like this, hey, look over here feeling. And I thought, oh, maybe my subconscious is telling me there's more chanterelles over here, right? Like, okay, I'll go with it. Because I tend to do that when I'm in the woods. I'll just go with my gut. And I just felt this gut pull. And I go over to this other, I had been leaving all my gifts on stumps because of the logged area. And I go over to this one area and on a stump is a geode, like this rusty, a little bit of a rusty colored iron oxided geode on the center of the stump. And that made no sense because the only geodes are down in a creek several hundred yards away. And it hadn't been there that long. You know, if something sits on a stump for a while, it gets like detritus around it, you know, little bits of leaves and dirt and stuff will collect around it. There was nothing there. Like it had been there. It had only been there maybe a week, a couple days. And that was another tap me on the shoulder moment because I'm like, wow, okay, what's going on? And I went over and looked at it and decided to go ahead and pick it up. And I don't know. I felt like that was for me. And I said, thank you. And I said, thank you out loud. And down the hill, there was this noise. Like the minute I said, thank you, it sounded like, I've never heard this sound before, and I've been in the woods a lot. It sounded like an owl that turned into a dog coughing.
Wow.
So it went like, hoo, hoo, hoo. And owls don't make that noise, and dogs don't make that noise. And just chills, right? Just chills went through. And I said, thank you, and left. I think I left an apple and some tobacco and something else there and made my way back out. Still have the geode, still have it in a special spot. I've had no other gifts in that spot. Like nothing else has happened there. At a little bit further down the road in this state park, I was creek walking and looking for fossils and also just kind of keeping my eyes open and walk the creek. This was also chanterelle season too. So I picked up some chanterelles along the way. Where I entered the creek was pretty open and I could see the whole area. I get on the creek. I walk the creek back. I'm coming back out. I've been out maybe 3 hours or so. I'm walking back out and in the exact area where I came into the creek was a triangular piece of old antique porcelain that the break on it was like an old Chinese tea house kind of blue looking china that was basically right in the spot where I had entered the creek. And I would have seen that. Like there's no, like I can't see how I wouldn't have seen it, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, I you've probably heard me, I'm sure listeners have heard me say very, very similar things before.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I could have stepped over it, but it seems highly unlikely.
Right. Well, and I think of the knife story, right? Chad's knife.
Yeah.
Like, you would have seen it.
Oh,
it's the knife.
And I was looking so hard for that because I really wanted, it was, this was early in our friendship, and I was like, I really want to find this knife for Chad, because he was really upset about it. And I was like, I'm going to find this knife for him. I'm going to do it. Like, I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to find it for Chad. So I cannot see how I could have missed that in the right. middle of the trail. There's just no way.
Yeah. And that's how I felt about the little ceramic piece. It's white. It's mainly white. It stands out against the brown rocks and the leaves. And it was on top of leaf litter. Like, And we hadn't had any flooding. We hadn't had any rain that would have shifted that up above the leaf litter or up above, you know, on the surface, so to speak. And there it was, plain as day. So I have that as well. It's right next to the geode. Because what else? It felt right. It feels like, I mean, you just, I don't know. It's a tricky dance, right? Like,
oh yeah,
is this for me or is this, what is this? What is going on? And I love it. I love it.
Had you found at any of the locations that you were leaving gifts were things, so surely any food's going to go. And that's,
right, absolutely.
You know, you can't explain that necessarily. But were things changing and moving around in those places?
Okay. So I would take pictures. I'd take a picture when I left it, and then I would take a picture the minute I came back to it, usually two to 3 days to a week later. The only movement, I had left some cedar balls that we had because I thought that would be interesting, and those got moved and chewed on by critters. But I had turkey feathers that I had found on a hike, and so I put those down. And one of the turkey feathers... So I had one on a tall stump, then I had a central gifting spot on a low stump, and then another spot with a rock cairn that I had made and some other gifts kind of in a small triangle, not a big triangle, actually, sorry. In that center one, the turkey feather seemed to have moved. And this is something that was laying pretty flat, and I had put a rock on it to keep it from being blown away or moved if a critter came up to eat some of the food that I'd left. And the turkey feather had, I'm pretty sure from my pictures, the turkey feather moved to point towards the tall stump. And that's the only thing that I can, in all the time that I've spent going back out there, back and forth, that's on the ones that I set up, that's the only thing I've seen move. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
I mean, sometimes that's the way it is too.
Yeah. And just patience. I'll just see what happens. I'm curious to see what happens once we get into winter. If anything changes, I don't know. But yeah, it's like I said, it's a tricky dance. And I think there's something to be said about Bigfoot and fairy and whatever we want to call fairy, right? Like, I almost don't want to say fairy anymore because it kind of, it's the other, right? The weird. I don't know. But whatever, there's something to be said there that Bigfoot, I believe Bigfoot is connected to that somehow. Now, not to get too woo-woo, but.
No, I mean, I think when you have these sorts of experiences, and if you read the folklore also, you know, as I've said in the books, whether they are or not, they're certainly acting like genus loci, like spirits of place, like forest spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that might be the best word we have for them. And, you know, to talk about, you know, the Class B encounters. And I was talking with Chad about this, and I've come to this sort of idea, you know, and allow me to be wrong and allow me to change my mind tomorrow. But
sure.
Right now I have this sort of working idea that seeing a creature, so I'm going to say a physical manifestation, but I want to be really careful with that because it makes it sound like they're beaming in like Star Trek or something. I don't know how this happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they are there and how they are not there other times. They seem to have this ability. But, you know, maybe the flesh and blood guys are right. Maybe they're faster than the flesh and they just... You know,
yeah, wrong way. Of course,
right? Yeah, I don't know by what means they achieve this, but I feel like footprints are the second rarest manifestation, and then the actual physical creature, the actual seeing the physical creature, is the rarest manifestation. But you get all these other things around it that are far more common and easier to sort of draw in,
right?
So I would say you know, you found that geo, you felt in a sense it was left there for you. And you have no evidence of this, but right. You have this gut feeling. And I know that gut feeling. Like, I'm intimately familiar with that feeling where you're just like, wow, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's a gut feeling. It's,
yeah. Yeah. And no one, there are people who hear it and they will know because they've experienced, or people who hear it and they will believe it for whatever reason, their own life experiences and their own beliefs and so forth. And there are people who never believe it, who would just be like, it was a complete coincidence. You know?
Sure.
Neither of us is going to convince those people at all.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that as well. The it's so easy to you can fall to both sides, right? Like I say, it's a tricky dance because there's a part of me that could very easily string together a really weird set of coincidences that made that geode be on that stump in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
You know, a hunter saw it and was walking with it and decided to sit down to have a smoke or whatever and forgot it there and it just left there. And but it wasn't hunting season when I found it. So,
yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of different stories I could tell that could give me a reason why it was there. But none of those match the weird, like you said, the gut feeling that is so hard to explain, but it's this gut sense that you're like, you just know that's what this is. And it's, unless you have that experience, it's so hard to explain to other people, right? You know it, so you can.
And also you realize like how crazy you sound sometimes too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes I think about like, the, you know, 48-year-old me telling these stories to 23-year-old me.
Uh-huh.
And 23-year-old me just being like, shut up, old man.
Right? Like, what do you know? Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Brian, thank you so much for sharing your stories. Like I said, I think this Class B stuff is part of the manifestation. It's the more common manifestation of it. And again, this is just my gut feeling. I don't know. But
it's a preponderance of Class B. You know, it's a preponderance of this evidence that isn't evidence. I don't know.
Yeah. And I love sharing the stories up because they're so familiar to me. You know, I could see them in my mind's eye and I know that feeling, just that feeling of wow when you get this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories. And for patrons, Brian's going to come back. He's going to tell us a story of missing time, some ghost stuff, and we're going to talk Mylar balloons as well. That'll be for an upcoming Patreon episode. Brian, thank you again for coming on Strange Familiar.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Tim. Pleasure to be here.
As I mentioned at the end of the interview there, we're going to continue our talk with Brian in a Patreon show. We will be releasing that next week. Now, I'm going to take a break next week, so there will be no regular show next week, but we will drop a show for patrons next week. We'll drop that second part with Brian. So patrons will get a show next week. We'll be back the following week, of course, with another regular episode. If you'd like to get extra episodes and you don't want to miss that episode next week, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Besides bonus content, we do at least one full extra episode of Strange Familiars every month for our patrons. Besides that bonus content, we often do more content. We offer discounts here and there when we can on different merchandise. There are other levels of support at Patreon for things like books and t-shirts and more. You can check it all out, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. If you don't like the idea of a subscription like Patreon, you can make a one-time donation via PayPal. Go to the show notes under any episode at strangefamiliars.com. You'll see a paypal.me link. You can click that and make a one-time donation. Everyone can help by sharing the show on social media, liking and subscribing wherever you're listening, whatever podcatcher you use, and leaving us those nice 5-star reviews, which helps get the show in front of new potential listeners. And of course, as always, I want to thank our patrons who make this show possible. We really, really couldn't do Strange Familiars without our patrons. So thank you so much, patrons. I'd also like to thank Chris D. for his PayPal donation. Thank you very much. And thanks to Caroline V. for her donation, which came via Red Circle. However, I wouldn't have known that if Caroline didn't let me know. So if you've made a donation via Red Circle, thank you so much. But they don't tell us who makes the donations. I just get a note that somebody's made a donation via Red Circle. Thank you. It's a huge help. If you're donating via Red Circle, that's awesome. We love Red Circle, and they've been a really great place for us to host the podcast, and we're happy to work with them. But I didn't want anybody to think we were ignoring them.
We just don't know who you are.
Yeah, the name just doesn't come through. It just says, you got a donation. So thank you so much, everybody, for those. Do you think it took 90 days for that puppy to become perfect?
Well, look who the trainer is.
That is a cute puppy.
That is a cute puppy.
Finally, we have a puppy pick.
Yes.
Did we do a dog before?
I'm not sure if we did. I mean, I have tons of dogs if anybody has a specific breed that they collect.
This is a little girl and her puppy. I'm going to guess this is pre-1910, like between 1900 and 1910.
Yeah, that square format's usually like a brownie camera. It's one of the earlier brownie cameras.
So
that, yeah, turn of the century.
Turn of the century. Very, very cute photograph. This neat little square format mounted photograph.
It's not in pristine, perfect puppy condition, but it's still super cute.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness, that is a cute pup. This is our photo of the week. If you go to the show notes under this episode at strangefamiliars.com, there'll be an image of this. You can click on that. It'll take you to our Etsy shop where you can buy this, and a few of the previous photos of the week are left there as well. We have a photo of the week section.
If you're looking for a photo, you know, to give as a gift, you know, if you want a topic or a location, a subject, an animal, you know, you feel free to email and I'll see what I have. And
yeah, we might actually have something to fit the bill for you. As we mentioned before, we do buy old photographs, particularly lots of them. If you have old photographs that you're getting rid of, let us know. We can
make you an offer.
Yeah. Speaking of our Etsy shop, of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, my Apparitions art book is available there, as are the rest of my books, if you want to get them there. Original artwork, I try to add original artwork occasionally. Sometimes I'll get a week where I'll add 5 or 10 new pieces. It's been a little while, so I'll probably add some soon. There's also Strange Familiars t-shirts there. There's some of my music and more. Check it out. It's Etsy shop name Lost Grave, one word, or if you look up Strange Familiars, our shop should come up in the searches. Speaking of Etsy, our friends at Karmic Garden have an Etsy shop, etsy.com/shop/karmicgarden. Trusted remedies made from Mother Nature. Karmic Garden has soaps, scented sanitizers, natural cleaners, candles, beard balm, and more, including the bespoke Timothy and Allison curated Strange Familiar scent.
I'm glad you put curated in that description. Otherwise, they might get kicked off of Etsy.
Right. There has to be something has to be curated at some point. Check out Karmic Garden. Again, that's Etsy shop name, Karmic Garden, one word. You can look them up. I think they come up under Strange Familiars too now as well, because the Strange Familiars soap.
Oh, that's good.
Just a reminder, no regular show next week. There will be a patron show next week, so patrons will get a show. And we'll be back on our regular schedule the following week. So we'll be back soon with another episode of Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more. DarkHollerArts.com. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more. Strange Familiars is on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars. Where you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group, and we're on Instagram at Strange Familiars. Sleep, you know, I dream of thee.
see you come to me as if you never die.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.